Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by Water, who reminds you, if there was no water, you'd be dry, saggy skin draped over even drier bones. Episode 255, RTK Query with Lens Vivatronic.
How good are you at chess, Robin?
Chess? Not good.
Yeah. Not good?
Not good.
Oh, you've played it though, right? Like,
yes, I've played it. My husband tried to teach me a while back and then he stopped playing with me because I was bad, but because I wouldn't stop talking about how bad I was. So he was like, I don't want to play with
you. I can see how that'd be annoying.
So no, I don't play chess very often.
Yeah. I played a little bit in middle school and didn't have any clue what I was doing. But then I just stopped. But like this year, for some reason, I just started watching chess YouTubers. And this was before like the whole chess cheating scandal, which a lot of people have heard about. There's a big cheating scandal that happened.
What's the TLDR if people don't know what you're talking about?
Arguably greatest chess player ever, Magnus Carlsen, was playing against another guy who's like 19. He's very young. And he's rose very quickly to grandmaster, like super grandmaster, like very, very top level. And his name is Hans Niemann. And he apparently Magnus thought that potentially Hans was cheating somehow in this game.
Which is a very serious accusation against a chess like grandmaster. You don't like,
right?
You don't do that lightly.
But Hans had actually admitted to cheating in like when he was younger. And then he had been kicked off of chess.com for cheating. Anyway, there's a big lawsuit now, and it's a huge fight. That's the TLDR. It's been kind of interesting. Doesn't seem like Magnus Carlsen would be the type to make this sort of accusation lightly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was following it before then, and I started getting into it about the same time as my son Cedric. Of course, now Cedric is like in the rating system, like 1,000 is supposed to be kind of the average, you know, good-ish. You know, chess player. I'm like 800, so I'm below average, and Cedric's a 1550 or something. He's way above average. We started at the same time, but he's just way better than me.
He has more time than you, maybe.
I'll say that that's it, but I don't even think that's true. He's a teenager. He's got a job. Like, I feel like I have more time than him. Anyway, chess is pretty fun, and it's one of those things that I'm kind of glad that I found it later in life. Because it hits the same sort of like dopamine receptors or whatever that coding did when I was mm-hmm. young. Like I got really into coding. I loved coding. I loved the sort of like figuring all of that, the logic out and all
coding
those things.
Coding doesn't do that for you anymore?
It does to some extent. I'm a little bit sad that it doesn't do it as much as it used to. But yeah, I can definitely say that there's been a drop off.
You'll have to try and teach me chess. Maybe you'll have more luck at it then. Than Travis did.
I can try. What really got me into it was that I learned an opening. And once you learn an opening...
So you always use like, that opening?
I only have one opening for white when I'm playing white. And then I actually have two different openings when I'm playing black. Because there's two different responses based on what they're opening.
Maybe that's what I need. I'm just always so overwhelmed by like... I can move any of these pieces.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's too many. It's like decision fatigue. It's like I can't choose between all these. So maybe if I... learn a couple openings.
Were you like me where I always thought that I had to think like 8 moves ahead?
Yes.
But
which
it's
I'm
not
good at. I'm like my yeah. brain doesn't keep track of that kind of forward thinking.
You can get really far just thinking 1 or 2 moves ahead. Like you can get really far. But you have to kind of know what you're trying to
well,
do.
Well, okay. I'm resolving. That's my New Year's resolution is to have Jamin teach me how to play.
I may have just destroyed your productivity.
Yeah.
I shot myself in the foot.
Yeah. When you ask me later why I haven't billed any hours, because I'm playing chess like you told me to.
I'm learning the London like you asked me to. Anyway, I'm Jamin Holmgren, your host, friendly CTO of Infinite Red, 800 chess player, and I live in the beautiful Pacific Northwest with my wife and 4 kids. I also play hockey at the rec level, which is like an 800, in hockey. That's kind of what I do. I'm joined by my, and we haven't used this one. by my mighty co-host.
I don't feel Robert. Very mighty today, but we'll go with it. I'll manifest that I'm mighty today. Maybe that'll mighty. Turn things around.
And we do have a guest as well, who I'm sure is mighty. I will introduce him in a bit. Robin Heinz is a senior software engineer at Infinite Red, future chess player. She's located west of Portland, Oregon, with her husband and two kids. How good is Travis, actually? Do you know? Does he have like an ELO rating?
I don't think he has an ELO rating. I'll ask him. Okay. How do you get one?
Just like on chess.com or Lee Chess or something
I'll ask him if he's ever gotten one.
Yeah. I mean, if he's around my rating, then we should play. Anyway, has specialized in React Native for the past 5 years. Our guest today is Lenz. Okay, hold on. I need to actually ask you to say your name.
Lenz Webertronic. So it's not Weber, but it's Weber.
Les
Weber. Weber.
Yeah.
Lenz Webertronic?
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't like fine. Is it like good?
Dude, I'm German.
Yes.
You will never get a higher praise than fine from me. It's not possible.
That's true.
We are joined today by our guest, Lenz Webertronic. First off, I want to say that is the coolest name ever. It is like, right? I was thinking you could start an electronics company and just and use
just
your
use
name.
Use your name, like, and it's the coolest, yeah. the coolest electronic company name. That's
yeah, Webertronic. You're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm married for that.
You're like, okay, I'm marrying you just so that we have the coolest names to put together.
Exactly.
Well, let's say there was no question on who takes whose name in the end.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You're like, this is an obvious choice. Like, I'm going that direction.
The coolest hyphenated name I've ever seen.
So Lenz lives in Germany, works as a senior full stack engineer for a company named Mayflower. He works with Mark Erickson on Redux Toolkit, co-maintainer of Redux Toolkit. And also Lenz is the creator of RTK Query, which is our topic today. Lenz, you mentioned that you have ADHD and you said that you had you probably had a 3-week hyperfixation period on every possible topic on the planet, which I love. I love that kind of characterization. As someone who has a little bit of ADHD myself, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think I'm about an 800 and probably everything. So
there you go. So he'd be a good one to play chess with.
I know, right? Have you played chess, actually?
Yeah, for a few years as a teenager.
Okay. Yeah, so you're probably better than me still.
I doubt it.
So what are you hyper-fixated on these days?
Right now, I'm actually playing around with a React Native a lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh. That's a good thing to be hyper-fixated on.
That's a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah, coming from React, playing with the animation stuff and the gesture stuff is just so much more fun. So
yeah,
I'm really happy to do that.
That's great. Well, our audience will be happy to hear that. Before we get into our topic, I want to mention this episode is sponsored by Chain React 2023. Chain React is back, finally, starting May 17th through 19th, 2023. It's going to be held in Portland, Oregon, as usual, at the beautiful Portland Center Stage at the Armory, which is in the Pearl District of Portland, if you're familiar with Portland.
It's a really, really cool building. If you haven't come to Chain React and you haven't gotten to experience the Armory, definitely check it out this year.
Yeah, I agree. Go to chainreactconf.com. All right, let's get into our topic for today, RTK query. So we had Mark Erickson on to talk about Redux, and he mentioned, now we kind of purposely excluded RTK query because we felt like that deserved its own treatment, and we purposely sort of like focused on Redux itself, which was a great episode. You should go listen to it if you haven't already. Mark did a great job. But let's talk more specifically about RTK query. And he did say, you got to go talk to Lenz. Lenz is the guy to talk to about RTK query. So first off, give us a quick kind of overview of what is RTK query from a 10,000 foot view.
From far away, RTK query looks like all of these caching clients. So you have stuff like React query for REST stuff, or you have Apollo or Oracle for GraphQL stuff. So it's that, but it's in Redux or in Redux Toolkit, which allows you to interact with it, like with your store.
Yeah, you're hearing more and more about these query libraries. Like everywhere, it seems like someone's using Apollo or React Query or something, because it's such a common pattern. Like every app that I've ever seen has some like form of, okay, get data, store it, cache it, like figure out if we need to fetch it again.
Yeah, and people have been using Redux for that like forever, but they always did it by hand. And it can be a good idea to do it by hand still, but oftentimes you just need this data from that endpoint. So you just need a document from the server, essentially. And for this use case of a document cache, that's nothing you have to do by hand. And so we provided RTK Query as a tool for that.
Before we go a whole lot further, I do want to sort of pause and just ask you a little bit about what your background is and how you sort of ended up in the React world with just like React world in general, and then specifically RTK and RTK Query.
Yeah, of course. I've been doing software development for about 20 years now. I've started up with PHP. Like, I still have a book on PHP 4.3 somewhere. Like,
nice.
They had classes, but it weren't like the classes that you know nowadays. And then came PHP 5, and everything was different. And I've been doing web dev there. I went a little bit over to C Sharp with ASP.NET. And about 2013, I really got into JavaScript and tried to do component-like things, but very handwritten stuff. Because it was like that promise that I had from ASP, like you write your whole thing and you have a click handler on it, and a little bit more declarative. And then React just came in and it fulfilled that promise for me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, that's how I came to React.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then how did you get involved with Redux specifically?
I've been starting to use Redux pretty fast, I think around 2017. So that was like the time when I came into the React world too. I started abstracting my own stuff pretty fast. And I also started using other abstractions. Like my favorite thing was TypeScript FSA, which is a super small library, but it does all the things that were necessary to get rid of most of the boilerplate, get nice TypeScript and everything like that. And during 2019, I kind of got into open source and open source maintainership of other stuff like forked ES Checker Webpack plugin and React Async. And I started contributing to Redux Starter Kit to the site. I heard the first time about that in 2018, like at the end when it was like the first alpha, the first time it hit Reddit. I just sent it to a colleague of mine and we were like going on about it. But TypeScript support wasn't there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone did a TypeScript pull request and it was kind of usable, but I wanted more. So I started contributing types and subsequently like teaching Mark Erickson TypeScript, because he was in that weird situation where he wanted this to have TypeScript support, but he didn't know TypeScript himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to teach him the knowledge he had to have to accept the pull requests, which was a super weird time for both, but really fun.
I'll tell you what, there's no better way to make friends with a maintainer than to improve the types of a library.
Yeah, because you have to get to know the whole thing so intimately in order to do that.
Yeah.
And they'll love you forever.
So true.
But you can really take it too far.
Right?
Lance, I need you to do it for MobX State Tree next. I mean, our types are decent, but they were written like four and a half years ago. So there have been a lot of advanced TypeScript features that have come out that would really help. I'm joking, but it is a great way to sort of get into the good graces of an open source project is to improve the types.
Yeah, it can be a little bit of a problem. Like if you come in and say, I've rewritten your whole library to TypeScript, not everybody might be happy about that.
That's true. That's true.
If you nicely ask before, people are generally pretty happy about stuff like that.
Yeah.
I feel like there's less and less pushback about TypeScript all the time.
It's true.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of become the default now. And I've seen even a lot of people who are very kind of TypeScript critical, TypeScript reluctant, I guess. And then one by one, they're being converted.
We've converted a couple.
Like, well, I still don't really like TypeScript, but it is kind of useful in some situations. And then the next tweet is, yeah, I mean, I'm starting a new project and I am going to go ahead and use TypeScript because I guess so. And then, you know, pretty soon they're like berating other people for not using TypeScript. So
that
it's a fun path.
I think the main thing about TypeScript people don't even realize is how much help you can get in the editor if a library has good types.
Oh, yeah.
You just start typing and everything is there. Everything is documented, even the weirdest things.
It's amazing. It's a completely different, how many years later, and I still think about what my dev workflow used to be like. And the amount of time I would have to run it and fix an error and then run it and fix an error and run it. And now that never happens because, you know, TypeScript. Anyway, this is not an episode about TypeScript. I know we could talk about TypeScript forever.
It's true. It's true. I want to say one more thing, though. I think I'm in those early days of TypeScript with GitHub Copilot because I keep telling people how awesome it is. And people are like, but, you know, I don't know. X, Y, Z reasons why you shouldn't use it. But it's eventually going to be one of those things that everybody's got an AI assistant, maybe not GitHub Copilot. They've got some sort of an AI assistant of some sort.
We still have to do an episode about GitHub Copilot.
We haven't done one
yet. We still need to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, let's do that. So let's go back to RTK query. It's all about fetching data, tracking loading state, caching. You know, these are super important things. How did you design the API? Was this based on stuff you'd seen in the past? Was it kind of were you using other libraries as inspiration? Did you kind of just come up with it completely out of the blue? How'd you come up with this?
There were a lot of inspirations taken here. I already said I was part of React Async for a little while. And during that time, the creator of React Async, Gert Hengefeld, he started the organization Async Library, and he just got a ton of amazing people in there and tried to force them to discuss and get one thing out that in the end would land and be the library. And that never happened, but there were lots of good ideas there. Then I've been using Apollo for a long time myself. And I think that was the first global cache with hooks. Mm-hmm. They were really fast. I think hooks came out somewhere around February in 2019, and 2 months later Apollo was out there with the hooks.
Wow.
Then of course React Query is a big inspiration. At some point, mm-hmm. I just went through all the features they had and checked what I still needed to add.
That's great.
And I think the most overlooked inspiration in there is actually Urkel. Urkel doesn't have a normalized cache by default, but it just stores responses from the server. And every time you fire off a mutation, it refetches all queries that could be modified by that one mutation. It just takes the type of the entity, and if you modify something with this type name and you have five cache entries that somewhere contain that type name, it says that could have been touched, we refetched that. And that gave me kind of the idea to do something different, a little bit different with a little more granular control there, but for REST. So in RTK query, you can just slap tags on things and say this contains that tag, this contains the tag, this contains the tag. And then you throw out a mutation, and that invalidates that tag. And all the cache entries that are still in use get refetched, and all the cache entries that are not rendered right now just get thrown away. And if they are ever needed again, they can be fetched again.
Wow, that's really ingenious. And is that specific to RTK? Are there any other query languages that are doing that with that tagging system?
You can kind of do something like that in a React Query with their cache keys. But in React Query, every query has one cache key. And in RTK Query, you can have 20, 30, 40 different tags on a cache entry. So you can do it a lot more granularly than you could do it
Yeah, that's really smart. Just so much more flexibility, so much more control over what gets kind of cached and invalidated. I mean, as we all know, as software developers, cache and validation is a tough thing, you know, to do. So like having that level of control is super
important. One of the things that's really hard in programming, it's like naming caches and like off by one errors or something.
Yeah, I haven't got the naming right. Like every time I want to name an API, we go back to Twitter and ask people if they have better suggestions. And if you look at RTK query, some of the options, definitely nobody had any idea how to call it. So yeah, we have weird options there.
Yeah, crowdsourcing those can be very, very fun. It's yeah, you'll get tons of opinions, of course.
Oh yeah.
Meanwhile, if you ask about something really important but kind of complex, you'll get nobody. Yeah, it's the whole bike shedding thing.
People love to bike shed.
Yeah, it's true. So you've been working a bit more with React Native lately. Is there any difference using RTK query in React Native versus React JS Web?
It's like the same difference if you just work with React Native versus React generally. Navigation and routing. You have those stack navigators in React Navigation, and that means that you have like tons of pages mounted at the same time. And that also means that you subscribe to all those cache entries. The user might never go back to them, but they are still subscribed. So if you invalidate them, you will fetch the data new. And that's just something to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. How do you avoid that? Like, is that something where you can in some way say, hey, this is kind of stale right
only
now.
If
like,
the
just
screen
stop
is
watching it
or something.
Yeah,
you cannot really do that. You can say, skip this query. So you have that is active page hook or something like that, I think. So you can just put the value of that into skip, and then all those other queries are unsubscribed. And they have a timer. You can configure that per default at 60 seconds. After 60 seconds of non-use, every cache entry will be removed.
That's really interesting.
If the user goes forward and backward, data is still there. If they go forward, 5 minutes later, they come back, data will be fetched again. But you probably want that because it's probably just out of screen for a long time. It's maybe outdated. You probably want to refetch that.
Yeah.
You want to reload it anyway.
Yeah. I wonder if you could probably do something with a focus effect too. Mm-hmm. Where you subscribe or unsubscribe. I mean, it totally depends on like, because obviously there's some data where like you're literally using it everywhere. It's like the core data for your app. And yeah, that would make sense to not have to unsubscribe from. But if you're talking about a list that you may never look at again, you want to refetch it anyway. So
pull requests are totally welcome. also, I have to add, the whole thing is modular. So we have RTK query is it's completely framework independent, so you can use it pretty much everywhere. And we have a React sub package that adds hooks on top of that. We had someone create the package on NGRX RTK query, so you can just use it in Angular. We also had someone doing experiments with Vue, and we have like somewhere a Svelte example. So nothing would stop you from creating a React Native entry point and just adding those special effect things in there. And
that's really
interesting. There.
Yeah, I'm curious. Actually, I have I'm curious if like Mavic State Tree, there are some other things out there. There's MST Query that sort of tries to go down this route. It's a solo developer though, so not as much effort behind it. Very cool package. Just like doesn't have quite the community. I am curious if something like RTK query, could you bolt it onto a different state management system rather than Redux, or is it very kind of integrated with Redux to the point where it would be kind of difficult to do?
I mean, you could take the API and re-implement it somewhere else. That's totally possible. But the point of RTK query was to do something like all the other managers with Redux, because you get all those benefits from that. You can have normal slices that just add an extra reducer on a query finished action or something and react to that. Or you can add a middleware that listens to stuff in there. So it's meant to be integrated with Redux. So, of course, you can't use just that, not have a Redux store or anything, but it would be kind of a waste.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yep. And there are some benefits kind of that you gain by having that close coupling with Redux, because you can really fine tune it for that use case.
Right. It gets you. I mean, you can use React Query for a lot of the same things, but it doesn't get you that tight integration with your state management library, which is where you're going to be putting most of this stuff anyway. So it seems like it's really handy to have them really tightly coupled. But like you said, it makes it. So it wouldn't make a lot of sense to try to attach it to something else.
I wouldn't overthink it there. Usually shouldn't fetch data from somewhere and then put it into your state.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we wouldn't recommend, even if you use the React Query and Zustand, for example, if you fetch the data from React Query, I wouldn't recommend to put that data into Zustand. You already have it in a state. It's in your global state. And everything that goes from there is essentially derived data. So as long as you can just derive that, don't store it somewhere else. The only thing I could think of is if you want to take that data into like a form and modify it or something, to take it as like an initial state for something. But I would try not to duplicate data. And that goes for everything. If you have data in your URL, don't put it into Redux. If you have data in your navigation and like anywhere, like if there's a good source for it, don't duplicate it somewhere else. Rather, try to combine those things in the end.
I think I generally agree with the concept of, you know, don't duplicate the data, derive it. Derive your state from the source wherever possible. I do agree with that. But at the same time, I feel like in real world projects, we end up putting it into state almost always.
Because we're not using query libraries.
Maybe we wouldn't
put it in state if we were using query libraries.
That's true. But having essentially a central place to access all your data, kind of in a, rather than kind of pulling it from different places, just having a place that you just know all your data is living and you're refreshing it from time to time. Kind of makes sense, but it is something that is, I'm definitely open to it, the idea of like, no, just let that live in your query library. Derive it, you know, if you need a common API, you can have sort of a layer on top of your state management and the query, you know, to some degree. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud a little bit right now. Like, it's interesting, but we do tend to use...
Frame of thinking. We're so used to like relying heavily on our Redux or our MST or whatever. And then like so all these instances where we've been doing all this caching and loading and fetching and stuff by hand.
Right.
Of course, you put your data in your state management library. That's where you put it. And now, so this is a different way of thinking, and you let your query library manage that. Do what it does best and manage that, the caching and the fetching and everything. And then you kind of have to think about your state management library differently. What's its role now is to then like point to that data and like do things with it or view it or like give it to your UI layer and that kind of thing, but maybe not store the master list the way it does now.
Yeah, that's one thing where we really notice where things are getting better if you use the approach of having a cache like that's a bit indexed and stuff like that. Imagine you have a page that displays a product, and you of course have because people have been doing that for like forever, they have a product slice that's kind of coupled to a product page.
Yeah.
And then they fetch data into that product slice, and then they leave the page, and then they come back to the page and they want to have a different product there. And then we get questions on Stack Overflow like, how do I prevent my old data from flashing up before I fetch the new data and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And if you go to React Native right now, it gets even worse, because if you have like a recursive navigation, you could have multiple product pages open at the same time. If you have a global state for those, that's coupled to the page.
Yeah.
Then all of them have the same data at the same time. And you have to mangle that and throw it away in the right moment and all kind of stuff there. And if you just have a use my stuff query hook or use my product query hook. And on one page, you call use my product 5. And on the one other, you call use my product 7. Then you have two separate cache entries. Those will never have any overlap. They have separate loading states. And you can have all those pages, and they will never have that flicker in between, that throwing away of data. You never care about all of that.
Because it's fetching from the cache for that key, for that product. And then, so when you load up, even if it's the same component that's being loaded up, it has all of the proper information shown. There's no kind of overlap there.
It's like it's creating and managing temporary slices for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Yeah. Yeah.
And the nicest thing is it's only one slice. It's absolutely chaotic. You never have to look into that. So
managing the chaos. Don't need to look behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly.
Just ask for what you want. It'll give it to you.
Yeah.
So if you start using a RTK query, you create one API. And that's where some people go wrong, because we are used to creating many slices, and they create multiple APIs. But essentially, you create one API, and you just add more endpoints onto that API. And you describe how those endpoints are queried. And that means in the end, you have one slice, you have one middleware that you have to add, and then you never touch your Redux store again. If you want to add a completely new API endpoint, you just really do that in your create API call. It's three more lines, and that's all you have to do. And you get a free hook out of it.
It really changes the way you use Redux. Like it's not just adding on top of what you're already doing with Redux. It's changing the way you use Redux. And it's honestly sounds like it's making it simpler.
Yeah. I mean, you have to learn a little bit. That's, I think, one of the bigger differences. RTK query looks a little bit intimidating at first look. Because you have to do this declarative thing where you declare your endpoint and stuff like that. Where if you start with something like a requery, you just write your hook and you call it, and you can do that inline of your component. You never have to go to another place. And I was pretty strict. I was like, we come from the Redux side. We want an API that's kind of declarative here. So you have to set up all your endpoints in before.
Which we do. Like, we do anyway. Like, we almost always have an API, like, service layer. And so you defined your API, and you're keeping your views completely unaware of what your API looks like.
Yeah.
You're not, like, calling things in the moment live.
And the nice thing is you can auto-generate that. If you have an open API file, you just throw it into our code generator. You get all the endpoint definitions you need. And we also have that for GraphQL. I mean, you might be arguing if you use GraphQL really deeply, you're better off with the real GraphQL client, because RTK query, all those libraries are completely independent. They just take a promise that resolves at some point. So they don't know about GraphQL. They don't know about the specifics of GraphQL, so that you can't take benefits from what GraphQL actually does for you. You cannot combine different endpoints where you see, like, this data should be that data. In those document caches, every request, every cache entry is completely separate. And if there's duplicate data, there is duplicate data. We just try to keep it synchronous by doing stuff like invalidating, refetching. You can do optimistic updates, although I'm not a really big fan of that. And with a GraphQL client, you fetch data, and if it changed, then it will update in 10, 20 different places. So if you have a super small API, of course you can go for something like RTK query. But if you really use all the features of GraphQL, you should use something made for GraphQL.
Yeah, and I think that ties into, I have so many more questions for you, Lance, but we're running out of time. One of the questions we like to ask people is, what sucks about RTK query? You know, like, where would you not use it? Now, you've already articulated some of those places, but what, in your opinion right now, sucks about RTK query, and what would you like to improve about it?
Well, there's no suspense story. And this is kind of deliberate from our side, because We have three pull requests at this point that all implement suspends with like 1 month in between. And then everything was scrapped because we heard that it should be done differently. So we never merged any one of those. And we will not until everything is clear from the React side. So if you want to use suspends, you have to use one of our experimental builds or something, or you go with another library that might already be deeper into that. And then there might also just be the thing, you don't use Redux and you don't want to use Redux, and there are good alternatives, so you're not forced to. If you look at RTK query against a React query or SWR, then I think it's mostly preference. They pretty much do the same job. They might do like a little bit better here or a little bit worse here, but it's mostly about the style you write code and you want to write code. So with RTK query, you write very declarative code. And with the other two, you're much more imperative in what you're writing and you're calling hooks and all that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how suspense evolves and how libraries evolve to use it and what the adoption process looks like. But it's still so new that like you don't see it very many places yet.
I mean, it's not ready yet. Works.
Yeah, exactly.
It says so on the release. Please don't use it for data fetching on the client yet. The story has not been written. And we're just adhering to that because with a package of this size, you release an API out in the wild. We can't really go back on that. And if it feels clunky, then it will feel clunky for the next few years. So we're holding back.
That's a pretty big responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
The, you know, the position you're in, you and Mark and the rest of the core team there. Because Redux is just such a huge, like, widely used package. And then RTK Query, I'm sure, is gaining popularity as well due to its, you know, kind of like prominence. And so I think that's an interesting one. This is not a little package that you're doing on your side, you know, project that maybe two or three people are using. Yeah. Like, this affects multinational corporations when you release something new. So you have to think about that.
Yeah, it's really creepy.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a very strange feeling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're out of time. This has been fantastic. I want to learn more, Lance. Where is the best place to go learn more about RTK Query?
Well, the official docs. And I'd say go to the Redux Toolkit docs. There's a whole section on RTK Query with like 20 subsections on there. There is also a quick start. If you went through the quick start, go back to the Redux homepage, go to the tutorial section, and go through the Redux Essentials tutorial, because that's where we want everyone to start learning Redux. And chapters, I think 7 and 8 are on RTK Query. So you learn everything it builds on. You will know how it works internally. You will know how to combine it with other tools. That's like the big tutorial. But take an afternoon of time because that's a really big tutorial. If you prefer video content, I just finished the first part of an Egghead course. So that should be out sometime soon. And I hope to do more after that. And we'll also put it on the Redux homepage.
Well, if that's out by the time we release, we'll make sure to put that in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be great. Where can people find you online to kind of follow along and see announcements?
Generally on Twitter. It's Phry there, Phry. And apart from that, if you go into Reactive Looks and into the Redux channel and ask a question, there's a good chance that I might answer. If you go on Stack Overflow and you ask a question and you tag it with Redux or Redux Toolkit or RTK Query, also good chance. Or if you come into OSGS. Like, we are everywhere.
Yeah, that's one of the strengths of Redux and the Redux Absolutely. Core team is just how incredibly involved in the community that you all are.
There's no shortage of places to find help with Redux and RTK and all related things, for sure.
If you'd like to nerd out more about React Native, check out my Twitch stream at rn.live. You can also find me on YouTube, youtube.infinite.red. Maybe I'll have Lentz on. at some point. I'm doing this publicly so that he feels pressure to join me.
I'm happy to.
Maybe. Awesome. And maybe we can do some Redux toolkit stuff, and it'd be a lot of fun to work with RTK Query. You can also join our Slack community at community.infinite.red. We have over 2,000 React Native developers in there. I actually recently asked that community, hey, do you think we should move to Discord? And it overwhelmingly, the people in there said no. I was really surprised. I thought they were going to all say yes. It was like 85% said no, stay with Slack. So if you prefer Slack to Discord, that's one place to go. And it's also only React Native, not React, nothing else, just React Native. You can find Robin online at Robin_Heinz. You are still on Twitter, right, Robin?
I am still on Twitter. I wouldn't say that I'm tweeting, but I haven't deactivated my account. It's not on fire yet.
Still active. It's not dead yet.
Okay. It's an experience for sure, but I'm still on Twitter.
You can find me at Jamin Holmgren on there, probably arguing with Lentz. No, just joking. We're good friends on there. And you can find React Native Radio at React Native RDIO. Thanks so much, Lentz, for coming on. It was awesome to have you on. I know there's so much more that we could have gone over. Like RTK Query has, there's a lot to it. And I think we could probably do 10 episodes on it. But we'll go into it probably in more detail if we get you onto a live stream at some point. And certainly people can find you and ask questions anywhere. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
As always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Wirth, our assistant editor and episode release coordinator, Jed Bartoski, our designer, Justin Husky, and our guest coordinator, Derek Greenberg. Thanks to our sponsor, Chain React. Go check it out, chainreactconf.com. Make sure to subscribe. Robin, do you have a mom joke to send us
I
off?
I think I do.
Style?
I do. What's black?
I was really hoping you wouldn't.
They're not that bad. Okay, what's black and red and black and red and black and red?
I don't know.
A zebra with a sunburn.
I feel like that joke had more potential than the payoff. Aww. Like, it could have been really funny, and it was.
I thought it was funny.
I'm chuckling.
At least someone is. All right, we'll see y'all next time.
Bye.
See y'all.